Are you or a loved one in the midst of a cancer diagnosis or bouncing back from your battle? Welcome to Thrive Through Cancer, the podcast that offers hope and healing and shares personal experiences, self-care solutions, health tips, and the support of a community of people just like you. I'm Susan Johnson, a functional nutritional therapy practitioner whose own son was diagnosed with cancer right before his third birthday. My job was to keep people healthy, to help them fight disease. So when my own son was diagnosed with this scary illness, it was so humbling. But rather than becoming a victim, I began researching. I up-leveled my knowledge and my mindset, and I chose to serve others through our own cancer journey. This show is an opportunity to find and share strength through our struggles. You'll hear from health professionals, innovative thinkers, beautiful personalities, and those who have learned to live life to the fullest despite their diagnosis. We'll raise some questions, find some answers, shed a few tears, share more than a few laughs, and give each other the motivation to get through one more day every single day. So join me in this journey and let's learn to thrive through cancer together.
Oh, this was such a special episode. I think you're going to love hearing what Dr. Tomas has to say and really his perspective on a cancer diagnosis. He also talks about some of the questions that he challenges his patients with when it comes to cancer and when it comes to the diagnostic process of cancer. I was blown away. He really encouraged me to think differently about this disease and to dig deep to figure out what are some unresolved conflicts I have in my own life. You're going to absolutely love this podcast, and I think you might just fall in love with this doctor as well. Dr. Tomas is a different type of physician. One of the biggest compliments that he gets repeatedly from his patients is that he gives them hope when they have lost it. He sees the body very differently, and he helps his patients understand the relationship between symptoms and causes. And he helps them understand that they are stewards of their own health, and they play a really big role in their own healing. Dr. Tomas is a board-certified family physician practicing primary care for the entire family, and he's been practicing for 20 years. He earned his medical degree at Cordoba National University in Argentina, and he completed his family medicine residency and women's health fellowship at the University Hospitals of Cleveland. You're going to hear a lot more about his story and how he started in conventional medicine and has totally moved to functional medicine, with his primary being oncology. But he has a wide range of medical experiences in a variety of patient care settings. His clinical experiences range from street medicine and small nonprofit clinics to mid-sized community hospitals and top-ranked national medical teaching hospitals. His longtime mentor was the founder of the Cleveland Clinic's Center for Integrative Medicine, and he spent the last 8 years practicing family medicine in Oregon. He believes that the practice of medicine must go beyond diagnosing illnesses and writing prescriptions. He works closely with his patients to understand the timeline of their health and the root cause of their symptoms. You are going to absolutely love this, and I'm so excited for you to listen. But before we get started, I want to remind you, you can have hope in your healing. You can feel well while fighting cancer, and ultimately, you can thrive through cancer. Well, I'm really excited to welcome a new friend of mine. Dr. Tomas and I met actually through my sister and brother-in-law a couple years ago at a health conference, and we were actually staying at the same house with my sister and brother-in-law, and I was immediately just captivated by his energy, by his knowledge, his passion for healing. And coincidentally, Dr. Tomas, his specialty is in oncology and cancer. And it wasn't always that way. And I'm excited for you to hear from him. But, you know, I was just telling him before we hit record that he's the guy that you want to have on like speed dial at all times. Now, don't worry, we're not going to share your phone number, Dr. Tomas, with everybody. But he is such a brilliant mind and also just a really passionate person. And I'm excited for you to hear from him today. So Dr. Tomas, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
No, thank you, Susan. And yes, it was fun. Those times together with your family, it was a bless.
We had a lot of laughs, a lot of fun, a lot of animals were involved. We were watching my sister's little cul-de-sac farm.
That was crazy.
Yes, yeah, pretty entertaining. Well, I would love you to share with us. So you are currently in practice in Oregon, and you're a functional medicine doctor, but it wasn't always that way. So would you tell us a little bit about your journey, how you got started in medicine, and then what shifted gears for you to step into a more holistic approach to healing?
Sure. I did my medical school in Argentina. I finished in 1998, and then I have some family in Cleveland, Ohio, and my uncle used to be a pediatric surgeon. He called me and he said, so what are you going to do after medical school? You need to have a very good training. Why you don't come here into the U.S.? We have the best hospitals, the best education. So I decided to jump here. And then start speaking English because that was the first thing that I had to start learning is this beautiful language that I'm still learning every single day. The only people who can really understand me 100% are my kids. Awesome. They say, Dad, you don't have any accent. I don't know why people don't understand you. But anyway, so I came here and then I started doing the American dream. You know, when you're a foreign physician and then you come to this, I mean, this country, you go to the big hospitals and then you train in by the best doctors and you do. I went to Cleveland, Ohio. I did my residency in family medicine. I choose family medicine because I like everything. And the only specialty that you can treat pediatrics and you can treat adults and elderly people is family medicine. So, and it was wonderful. It's something that we don't have in Argentina. We have something called general doctor or generalist doctor, but it's not like that. It's a little trauma and then and internal medicine, but they don't see pediatrics. They don't see OB and pregnant women. And so it was awesome. So during that residency, I specialized in woman health. So I became a GYN doctor. I did a lot of PAPs, a lot of, you know, colposcopies. I become a training fellows, and then all my journey in family medicine with my patients are the one who actually push me for more and for more and for more and for more. So about 13, 14 years ago, I was treating diabetes, and then I was actually in the board of diabetes here in the hospitals in Oregon. I started in Ohio, and then I moved here just to Oregon about 13 years ago. So I was treating a patient, and this patient was doing everything that I told her, and then taking all these very expensive medications and shots, and her blood sugars were very well controlled, and her kidneys were not doing good, and they were not doing good. And then after a year of treating her, her kidneys were about to go into dialysis. So she looked at me and said, well, we did everything you, as a great doctor, told me. But I'm going to go to Mexico and my old doctor is going to heal my kidneys. So I was like, okay, you go to Mexico. If this doctor heal your kidneys, I'm going to actually personally fly to Mexico and I'm going to meet him. So 90 days later, this woman came to my office, and by weird surprise, I did a blood work and her kidneys were not 100%, but probably 90% better. Something that in medicine is impossible. We call that a miracle. So I was furious. I was like, wait a second, what is this guy doing that I'm not doing? So I decided just to flew to Mexico. The next day after I did this test, it was a Thursday, I grabbed my wife with me and say, I'm going to San Diego tomorrow morning. You want to come with me? We're going to cross the border by walk. I'm going to take a taxi. I'm going to go to Tijuana. And I'm going to meet this doctor. And she looked at me and said, you crazy? He's like, no, I closed my practice and I'm going to go there. So I went there, and then we went there on Thursday morning. About noon, I was, you know, taking a taxi. And I went to this house, and this house was a line of people outside the house. It's a big, big, big line of people. And I went to meet this guy. I don't know if I can tell his name here, or I don't know.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, you can. Okay.
Okay, so his name was Sergio. It was a very short, tiny Mexican doctor with a suit. He was probably 4.5 feet tall. And then he looked at me and said, oh, wow, you must be Dr. Tomas. It's like, yes, I am. Who are you? And then the guy says, well, I'm Sergio. It's like, my patient's talking to me. I said, I know, but you did something with one of the patients of mine. do you cut a chicken neck and you put some blood on this patient? And what are you doing? And then he looked at me and was like, well, I'm doing medicine. You don't. And that shocked me. I was like, wait a second. I have all these degrees right here in the wall, and I have more in the other walls. I have degrees all over the place. Wait a second. I'm doing medicine. I'm board certified and blah, blah, blah. I'm coming from the best hospitals. I'm giving the best medications. And he said, no, I'm sorry, but you're not. And then he showed me a little bit about what he was doing. He was doing homeopathy medication with some machines that come from Germany. And then some colonics, and then some, microscope and studying the blood. And then he gave me 5 books and said, you know what? Read these books, and then we can go to Greece together in a few months if you want. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do that. So we flew back on Thursday, the same day, with my wife. We crossed the border. That's another story for another day. And then I started reading. I started reading, and I read on Thursday evening, all day Friday. I didn't go to work. Saturday, and then Sunday morning, I wake up and look at my wife, and I say, I can't go to work anymore. And she looked at me, it's like, well, what are you talking about? We have four kids. You are a great doctor. It's like, I can't work. I can't practice medicine anymore. It's like, why? Because everything that I know is wrong. And then I said, what do you mean everything you know is wrong? I say, everything that I know is wrong. In medicine, for chronic medical illness, is wrong. So that's where my path started, you know. And then I bought a boat, and then I was bringing patients to fish with me, and I was telling all this truth that I just discovered. And then little by little, so it was my patience. My why is my patience just forced me to wake up and then see there was something else than chest prescriptions and surgery and x-rays in order to treat these things that we call diseases. There's no such a thing as diseases, but we treat it with just 3 tools. In our toolbox, we have medications or surgery or images or radiology. That's the only thing we have. Mm-hmm. So, and we label, symptoms, and we put symptoms together. We label syndromes, and that's what we do. And we're pretty good at it, and we are legally and socially accepted. And that's what we do all day. So you come and say, "What do I have?" And say, "What symptoms do you have?" Mm-hmm. We're very good at ask questions to discover the symptoms, and I say, "I think that you have a urinary bladder or a bladder infection. I think so you have something called asthma. I think so you have something called like this." So functional medicine, I was introduced to functional medicine in Cleveland Clinic, actually in Cleveland. My mentor, you have a mentor when you do your residency, and this mentor, her name was Tanya Edwards. Tanya was a special family doctor. She believed in herbs before medications. And then she grabbed me and says, you know what? This is your book. You need to study a little bit of herbs and then teas and this and roots and minerals and vitamins. And you need to know a little bit about that. And I think that would be great for you. So the Department of Functional Medicine, the building in Cleveland Clinic, is called Tanya Edwards. She actually unfortunately died years ago. And then, the building of functional medicine, that's her name, because she introduced to Cleveland Clinic the functional medicine concept. It's incredible. It's not too old. You know, we don't have functional medicine in this country for like, probably, I don't know, maybe 20 years.
Yeah, it's new. You said that I thought was really remarkable, and it sounds like very similar to this Tanya Edwards woman as well, is in order for you to get to this place, you were willing to check your ego at the door because, like you said, you trusted this little man in Tijuana in a very poor part of Mexico who was working out of his house. You were willing to trust him because you saw results, whereas I think, unfortunately, a lot of people and a lot of your colleagues and our colleagues in this space are unwilling to realize that all of this money you spent and all of the diplomas and all of the board certifications that you've received maybe weren't all of what was needed, right? And I love that, like, Tanya Edwards, same thing. It sounds like she was like, no, this isn't good enough. People need more. And so I just wanted to take a minute to recognize that and just thank you for being willing to check your ego. And it's hard. It's hard to realize what you learned for so long. You have to kind of unlearn in a way and just be okay with moving forward in a totally different direction.
Yeah, no, you're forced by results, and frustration is beyond the ego. We yeah. learn medicine to help people. When your tools are not helping your patients, you become very your self-esteem and everything become like, what I'm doing actually. So it's beyond the ego. It's like you're doing something wrong, and then it's not working. It's like it's incredible. It's incredible. It's like I really think that it's an awakening in the worldwide right now, mm-hmm. in the MD world. I mean, you're talking about functional medicine at Cleveland Clinic right now, and they talk about probiotics and prebiotics, and it's like leaky gut, and then they talk about all the things. For me, it's like, whoa, it's like, wow, these big hospitals actually are there thinking that it's such a thing as leaky gut and leaky brain and all this very functional medicine diagnosis again. Mm-hmm. And I think it's wonderful. So we're going in the correct directions. I think that there is a good blend that it could happen, because the current medicine, the current pharmaceutical companies has a beautiful research, a beautiful microscope, a beautiful biology. So they have a lot of money. So they can actually, we could have worked just together and be awesome for humanity, mm-hmm. you know. But it's like a baby with steps, and then I am very, very happy that at least there is a group that is actually putting that concept of at least a functional medicine that is better than traditional medicine, and beyond. You know, there's a lot of therapies right now that they're more open to listen and stuff like that. So my other patients were my family, and then my other patients were, you know, patients with cancer. Yeah, I have patients with cancer, and the same thing, that they were like, we have three things. We have chemo, radiation, and surgery, and then we don't have any other options, and we cannot actually do anything else. So I have patients who actually show me that there is something else, and then there is other alternative options, and then they are sometimes effective, sometimes not. So my passion was like into that, and there was an awakening, and it was a call, and it was a purpose that I was like, okay, this is my family, this is my patients, my close patients, that all of them are like my family. It's my responsibility, at least just to be aware, just to know, just to, you know, to do more research about it. And little by little, it was amazing, because I discovered this passion that it was above and beyond. It's not about how to cure cancer, but it's about why we have it. And then that was the most important discovery in mind, peace of mind, and to transmit to my patients. And then that is awesome. You know, when we create this war against cancer, you know, and then and that is the wrong enemy. So so that's what, you know, again, by force, by my patients and my profession, and opening my eyes, and it's like, you have an obligation now to understand this and to treat this different, and to understand this very complex subject in a different way. And then when we have an understanding, then the digestion or the treatment of the expectations change completely. You know, when they tell you that you have fever, and the fever or high temperature is good for your baby or it's good for you, maybe you're panicking and you're understanding, and then your reactions and your treatments start changing a little bit. And mm-hmm. I said, well, wait a second, why is it good for my baby? And then when somebody understands and explains to you, I said, oh, that makes sense. And so the same thing happened with this chronic inflammation called cancers. So that's my passion, and that's my dream, and that's my purpose nowadays. And then I
love that. Okay, friends, when was the last time you bit into a juicy burger or a perfectly cooked steak and thought to yourself, man, this is the best thing I've ever tasted? I imagine it's been a while, probably because most meat products are conventionally raised, which not only affects the flavor profile, but it really diminishes the beneficial nutrients and minerals. And believe it or not, even products that are labeled grass-fed or, quote, ethically raised to make you think they're higher quality are often finished on grain or in factory farms. This is why I'm so freaking excited to share something with you today that will not only help you avoid the hormones and antibiotics, pesticide residues that actually totally change the taste, but also the health of the meat. But guess what? You could also save nearly $1,000 over the next year on your grocery bill. And the best part? This may be the best tasting thing you have had in a long time. Okay, so what am I referring to? Well, I'm talking about Wild Pastures Meat Delivery. They provide the highest quality meats, get this, from all small, regenerative, family-run farms here in the U.S. that prioritize sustainability and animal welfare. Their beef is 100% grass-fed. Their pork and poultry are pasture-raised, something you won't find anywhere in grocery stores, resulting in meats that are not only healthier for you, but also better for the environment. And one of the reasons why our family loves Wild Pastures is that we can opt out of supporting harmful conventional farming practices and instead support small family-run farms without spending a fortune. Guess what, though? The convenience doesn't stop there. They offer delivery straight to your door, so you can enjoy delicious, high-quality meats without ever leaving your house. No matter where you are in the 48 states, Wild Pastures has you covered. Not only is this the most convenient way to get your meat products, but Wild Pasture meats are better for you, as I mentioned, nutritionally. You've learned a lot about that on this podcast. You've got way higher phytonutrient content, antioxidants, fatty acids, vitamins, minerals, proteins, and amino acids. Here's the deal. Today, for a limited time, you can get 20% off every box, plus free shipping for a lifetime, and $15 off your first box. Just simply go to bit.ly/seasonwildpastures. That's bit.ly/seasonwildpastures. Now, if you're interested, don't wait, because this deal won't last forever. And you guys, I am obsessed. Think ButcherBox, but about 100 times better as far as farming practices, organic standards, and flavor. This is our new favorite, and I am so excited for you to try Wild Pastures meats.
Probably you said, 90% bull with this now.
Yeah, and that's the majority of your patients now is cancer, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you had said something when we were together, and you said, you know, we need to learn, especially when you made that mention of this war on cancer. And that's what it's been since Richard Nixon declared the war on cancer, and clearly we haven't made much progress, but it's this war. And you had made a comment when we were together about a month ago or so. You said, we need to learn to live with all of these things. We need to learn to live with the 5G and live with the mold and live with the bacteria. And we have to be willing to adapt and learn to live with it. And it's such an opposite analogy than the war against cancer. So will you tell us a little bit about that? Like when you have a patient come into you with this diagnosis, like you said, and let's say it's a, I know you, you work with some of the most advanced diagnoses. You have a patient come into you. Where do you kind of begin with that process of helping them get their mind right and understanding this cancering process from your perspective?
Well, the first thing I told them that I have to respect their panicky and their fear and all that conflict. It's a conflict. It's an emotional conflict that's going through them. It's the second emotional conflict. This emotional conflict has a purpose. So to my patients, the first thing I tell them that the cancer is not here to kill them. The cancer is here to help them. and that they need to love their cancer and be very proud and happy that they have it. Because if they didn't have it, they would not be here a long time ago. So the first thing I tell them is like to slow down. You don't want to take this away from you. You want to understand why you have it. And if you understand why you have it, you would be very happy with this. Like having, if you're in the middle of a lake, like the lake is really, really cold, and you're in a little tiny boat, and it's a very stormy outside, and you get inside the water, and you fell in the water, I give you a life jacket. And the life jacket is going to help you to give you time for you to swim back in the boat. Or if you were close to the shore, you can go back to the shore. So the life jacket is a cancer. So the life jacket is what is saving you so you don't drown. Can you live in the water for a long time if it is very cold? No, you can't. Mm-hmm. Nobody can. And it's not intended for you to live in the water. It's just to give you enough time to you can jump in the water to understand why you fall in the first instance, because you were drunk, because you were partying too much, because you were not paying attention, and that's why you fall in the water. And then to give you understand what in reality, what was that fight that you were having in the boat? You were having this very nasty fight, and then all of a sudden you lose control and you fell inside the water. So now you're going to be being clear about what is actually really important. Because now I'm going to drown. Is that fight is really important or was not important? So it's a beautiful reason that you have this life jacket. And then everybody is doing war against life jackets. It's crazy. Mm. We need to have them. We need to have a lot. Animals don't need a lot of life jackets. You know what? They don't argue a lot. They don't have a lot of conversations and a lot of emotions. So I always say we need to learn from nature, and then we need to understand what nature is doing, and then nature is perfect. Whoever created nature is very smart. Is that right?
Yeah, right.
That's exactly. Making a mistake. Oh, he didn't. Oh, it didn't. That person. That was very hard to say. He or she or it didn't. So this entity, it didn't do any mistake. So we are part of nature. We are making of the same elements. We have the same chemistry table elements of nature. So we don't make mistakes. So if we understand about these diseases or this chronic inflammation of these things called cancer, then we need to check in nature. So nature has them. Most likely they don't. They don't, that they have this inflammations as the one that are close to us or feeding by us. So if we go to the zoo, yes, we can see a lot of cancer in animals and elephants and giraffes and stuff like that, because we feed them and we transmit them our emotions and stuff like that. But in the woods, in the jungle, we're not going to see this too much, almost none. There is a genetic, and I hate to talk about genetics, but there is a predisposition with the genes of a genetic cancer that is probably less than 2%. They say it's 2.3%, but I would say it's way less than that. That's to preserve the species, for like just control how much of one species is growing. But that's not the 20 or 30% or 35% that we have right now in humans. So it's like it's completely insane. So so what we need to understand is we have this, and we have more and more and more of this, and then. And then I think so it's by necessity of an adaptation and a temporary adaptation. And then by necessity of all these feelings and communications, the way that we're communicating now compared to 50 years ago is huge. It's 10 times more. You know, 100 years ago, you were talking to maybe 20 people a day. And the people who live in your town or in your house. Right now, we're talking to 100 people a day, and we're getting information for thousands of people in radio in a day. So we need to process a tremendous amount of conflicts and emotions for a lot more people. So it's not just the 5G. The 5G is giving the opportunity to actually get more conflict at the same time. So it's a necessity. We need to go through the 6G, 10G, and 20G. But that's going to give us like more and more responsibilities just to handle these conflicts. That at the end, we are born and we're on this planet to have conflicts. So that's the beauty of life, is to have conflicts. And then when you have these conflicts, you can change and you can adapt and you can grow. So when we have conflicts, we can change, we can adapt, and we can grow. One of the consequences of having conflicts is a biological response to that conflict. So when you have a conflict, like your pet die, or you know, your house burn or something, you know, like an emotional conflict, there is a biological response to that conflict. So it's the consequences of that. And the consequences of that conflict is what we call cancer.
So it's the digestion
of that conflict.
Yeah. So it is understanding, getting clear with what you said, this idea that, you know, cancer is an opportunity to step into deeper healing and really help heal these conflicts that were maybe unresolved, but also learning to live in a more peaceful, intentional state as you're walking through the healing journey with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, you had shared a story about one of your, it might have been a colleague. I'll say that because I don't know how personal this information is, but it was a colleague of yours. And this colleague was recently diagnosed with cancer. And, you know, in this same idea of like understanding, looking at cancer is changing our whole perspective on it and looking at it as this beautiful opportunity to step into deeper healing and help resolve unresolved issues, right? But then we have to also latch on to the belief that we can heal and the belief that our body can do what it's supposed to do. And you have this colleague that was diagnosed with cancer, and you'll have to tell the story, but it was she received the results but hadn't looked at them, and you had looked at them. And you gave her a response to these results that was different than what the results showed. Do you know which story I'm referring to?
Yeah.
Is that something you're able to share?
It was very, very similar. Yes. No, absolutely.
So tell us that story, because I think it...
Day.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So when you receive an image or a tumor marker... is the interpretation of that is huge for the patient. It's huge because you put all your emotions and all your faith and all your conflicts. Remember I told you about emotional conflicts? So the emotional conflicts give you, in the beginning, let's start backwards a little bit. The emotional conflicts in the beginning, the burning house, the dying, the dead pet that you have in your house, it give you a chronic inflammation. It give you a cancer. When you are diagnosed with that cancer, that fear that diagnosis gave it to you, it creates another conflict now. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So when the patients come to see me, they not only have the original one that I try to explain to them and then try to discover and try to explain this, like, and if we don't fix this one in the beginning, this one is still going to grow, is still going to be doing this stuff. But now they have this one that is creating a third one. So when they send to me the CT scans and when they send to me about, I always tell them, it's like, do you really want to know this? I want to know. I don't know, because they guide me if I'm the correct path with my therapies and my correct path with my techniques. And then we are in the correct path. And sometimes seeing nodules and sometimes seeing markers going up during therapy, it means nothing. Actually, it means that it's pretty good and it's healing. There is an inflammatory phase in the treatments, especially in immunotherapy right now, in cancer. There is an inflammatory response, and that is excellent. And when the people do the CT and the people do scans and people do blood works and markers, for them, this is growing. this is eating me. This is death is coming sooner. And then that created tremendous conflict that I can't treat. So fear, lack of faith, I can't treat it. There's not enough medicine, there's not enough love that it will treat that. So I told him, it's like, I can treat every cancer, and trust me, I can probably treat every cancer. I cannot treat every patient with that cancer. So the cancer is simple. The patient with that cancer is the problem.
Yeah.
So cancers are all simple. They all like to eat sugars. They don't like oxygen. You know, they're pretty simple. But the patient with that is the problem. Mm-hmm. And if the root cause that was the conflict, the root cause, is not being acknowledged, is not being understand, is not being taken care or digest or forgive better, that original biological response of cancer is not going to get better. You can kill it. You can destroy it with chemotherapy, with radiation. You can do whatever you want. It's going to come back. 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, it's going to come back because it needs to come back. You didn't learn how to stop dancing in the edge of your boat.
Right.
You know, you don't learn how to stop arguing in the boat with all these people. You cannot have 20 people in your boat. You have to have only 2 people. Or maybe you need to be alone. So if you don't learn that, I can put you back in the boat 2 times, 3 times, 4 times, but guess what? You're going to go back into the water again.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what we need to learn. So we need to learn about the root cause. This is good for me. And the German medicine. So what I'm telling you on this analogy about conflicts and biological response, so the conflicts create cancers, is not based on me. It's based, actually, it has some science behind. Some science from embryology, some science from how we are created and the layers, and depends what type of feelings or conflicts you're having. Those layers are being affected, and then you're going to have different type of cancers. So each cancer has their own target type of conflicts. That is called the new German medicine. Actually, I was reading an article. The patient just leave me right here. It's the German new medicine. So what they don't understand, even this German new medicine doctors, is that we don't need to be afraid of the conflicts neither. We don't need to be afraid of the conflicts. We are born here to have conflicts. So it's like my mom used to tell me, it's like, oh, Tomas, you're going to have your cross. You know, you're going to carry your cross someday, you know, kind of like you're going to have your conflicts, you know, coming out to your life. And then I always look at her, it's like, why you want me to have this crosses, you know, me? And then well, now I understand, kind of like we all have to carry these crosses of these conflicts. That's what we are here. Mm-hmm. We're not here just to walk free, and then because if we do that, we don't need to be here.
Right.
We were not here at all. So the reason we go, we are here, and then we live this life, and 20 years or 1 year, or 5 years, or whatever time or length. Sometimes it's 3 months inside the baby of a belly of a woman. Sometimes we need to be those 3 months, you know, just to complete that conflict. So it depends. So when we are here, just to have those conflicts or those crosses or whatever we want to call them. German medicine called conflicts, emotional conflicts. And then and how we handle them is the learning. How we handle those conflicts is the learning. And there is one vaccine, and I don't like to say vaccine too much because all this IAs is going to listen to my voice. So it's one vaccine or one antidote or one medication to be immune to this emotional conflict, to all of them, and that is unconditional love. So when we learn unconditional love, I think that we are 99.9% immune. And then it's a process of learning that, you know. It's a process of learning that. They say some questions about why the baby doesn't have unconditional love and why an embryo has unconditional love or something like that. That's what we give it to, you know. There is a matter, too. There is a mass and a matter that is, you know, constantly exposed to all these emotions, too. Not the one that we create, but the one that bombards to us. So, but it's unconditional love. So we learn in 20 years and 30, 40, 60, or 80 years to be unconditional love. And it's so hard. There's a few humans in history, human history, who actually mastered that. And they didn't have cancer. And because it's impossible. It's impossible. It's impossible that an emotions will create that conflict.
You think about the last.
You don't have any bad emotion.
Right. Well, and think about how much sickness we've seen develop recently, how many more diagnoses we're seeing, and what did the last 3 years give? I mean, there was so much conflict, right? So much of that. And for many, probably just chronic conflict constantly, just whether they were wrapped up in what was happening in the world or animosity toward their neighbor or all of the things. And so that is such a good reminder that, again, even coming back to that first thing that you had said was, we have to learn to live in this world and adapt to the conflicts, whether that conflict is, you know, a toxin or an emotion or whatever it is. I'm curious, you know, you had said to me, we were talking about a couple of different therapies that you do. And by the way, for those of you listening, we're going to link Dr. Tomas's website, and you'll see he actually does a ton of different therapies and treatments and medication if necessary, all the things. Like, he is a full functioning doctor. But the reason that I think what sets him apart is just this focus on getting to the root cause of your emotions and how are you going to walk into this and what is your belief around this. And that's why I think this is so special. But I had asked you a question as we were talking about different treatments, and I think it was for a friend of mine. And I said, if they're worried about this, I can't remember exactly how I asked you, but I said, you know, they're worried about this, so they want to go get a scan and to follow up. And your response really surprised me. Now it makes sense hearing this, but you said, you tell people that if they want to go get, like, and you mentioned, you touched on this briefly, but if they want to go get a scan, whether it's a follow-up or, you know, imaging to follow up or to get an initial diagnosis, what you said, Susan, I always say, before you go do that, first ask yourself, what are you going to do with that information? And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so powerful, right? I mean, you said it.
So don't order the test. Another mentor of me always say, don't order a test if you don't know what to do with the results. So don't order a blood work if you don't know how to read it. Don't order an images if you don't know what you're going to do with the results. Because, you know, as you create more problems and more conflicts with that than anything else. We have, for you to know, we have 6 stage 4 cancer in our life term. So after 75 or 78 years old, you went through 4 to 6 stage 4, like very bad cancers in our body, that because you were not aware, didn't care. You're born with 60 million cells of cancer cells, you know, in your body when you're born, 1 day old, baby. And then the baby doesn't know, the mom doesn't know, the father doesn't know, the immune system knows, and then it's taking care. So there's something normal that when we don't know, it's perfectly fine. But when we know, and that I experienced that in medicine too, because I have this elderly patients that the family say, don't tell grandpa, because if you tell grandpa that he has the prostate, he's going to die. This is totally fine. He's in the farm. He's doing the farm back here, but the PSA is so high, and, you know, he's touching his back a little bit, but And here it goes, that I cannot be like that. I am a doctor. I need to tell the truth. I need to tell the information, the patient deserve, and blah, blah, blah. And my philosophy was always like, you know, be honest, straightforward, and then, sir, sorry, you have cancer. And then the guy's like, do I have it? It's like, yes, you do have it. I mean, we have this option, this option, and this option. And the woman's like, no, I don't want anything, you know? And then here we go. 2 months later, three months later, now I create the conflict. I create the fear. I create the, you know, the no self-worth or, you know, self-validation. You know, it's like, I'm done. That's it. He told me that I'm done. And then and he was dead, like three months ago. And then there was other patients that respected the wishes of the family. And they were good in a year, 2 years. And then I was taken home. I was like, wow. These markets were going up. He never knew about it. And then I had, you know, permission for the family, stuff like that. And it was, wow, it was incredible. I was like, oh, wow. So if they don't know, actually, they actually sometimes it's better. Sometimes. I'm not saying all the time, but sometimes right, was better. So that made me start thinking about it. I was like, wow. So really fear and these things actually is a huge component into this treatment without doing anything. Nothing. These people didn't do nothing. Just telling or not telling. So I started reviewing, and I came up with this little surprise that we have through our lifetime several cancers, and then severe cancers. But that's the reason because we don't do whole body MRIs. That's the reason because we don't do MRIs of the breast. That's the reason because we don't do this full body scanners, stuff like that. We're going to find a bunch of things. And then we don't know how many lives we're going to save with that finding so many things. So we're going to remove all these nodules. We're going to remove all these lymph nodes. Anybody who has 10 lymph nodes, we're going to be removing it, but five, we don't. We don't know what to do with all this information. So far, if we didn't do anything, I told you that I think it was Israel, and I think it was 1984 or 86, he had a strike in the whole country of doctors. So doctors were not working or seeing patients for a long time. Maybe it was 3 months or 6 months. And then at that time, that year, was the lowest mortality in the history of that country.
No way.
So they say, and they have their argument, they say because it was not, you know, there was not, the statistics was not running. And then, of course, you know, going to see the low numbers and blah, blah, blah. But I'm strong believe that. I said, that was great, you know. The less we do, the more people will live. I think, no, we are the third cause of death, actually, at least in U.S. It's cardiovascular disease, it's cancer, and it's doctors. I don't know if you go to the CDC, go to Google, something. We're the third cause of death. You think it was accident, you think it's poison, you think, I don't know. But no, we are the third cause of death. I think so. We are the second one. in my belief, I think we're the second. We're competing with number one. But anyway, it's actually sad just to mention that. But I hope we get better. But
here's the crazy thing. This is why I was so excited to have you on, and I've got to have you back on because I just think this is. This in itself is the topic we could stay on forever. But I just think that this, and I hope those of you listening, this gives you so much hope. And even when Dr. Tomas said something about, he used the term just extreme inflammation. And that's what I've learned when my son was diagnosed. That's what I learned to look at cancer as over the time of working with the doctors and helping him heal. And it changes your perspective. And so if we're looking at we're walking away from this, we should be filled with so much hope because we can have control over our emotions. We can control how we respond to conflict. We can control our outlook on a situation, whether it's a diagnosis or a symptom or a situation. So I think that's probably one of the scariest things about cancer is, and I hear this every day when I talk to a new family that's their child's diagnosed is, but Susan, now we feel so out of control. And it's true because you're thrown into conventional medicine and they tell you what to do and they give you all, like you said, the three options and then it's just, you feel out of control. But actually we can control a lot of, and it really comes down to us. And you mentioned unconditional love being the potential antidote or vaccine to this issue. And that is also something we can control. And maybe for those of you who are diagnosed or walking through a journey right now, maybe it's learning to have unconditional love for yourself or learning to forgive yourself, right? And I think that it maybe sounds easy, but I think for a lot of people that's actually harder than taking a pill. It's harder than going and getting your chemo treatment.
Oh, it's hard to hate, to love your enemies.
Yes.
It's hard to love your rapists. Imagine somebody who killed your kids and you need to love them. I mean, it's hard to, because you would put in that person, like the killer, you put that cancer as a killer and you need to love it. It's unbearable. It's crazy. But if you have unconditional love for everyone and for everything, that thing would not affect you. It would not affect anybody.
Yeah. Oh, man, this is so good. I just appreciate you, and I'm so fortunate to have gotten to know you and to just have this connection. I think that I know you've helped so many, and I just can't even imagine the amount of people that you'll continue to help. And like I said, we're going to link his information so that if you're interested in getting a hold of him and working with him, you know, it's funny. I always tell people, in my experience, the best healers that I have met happen to be working out of small offices in these random areas in the world. And it's so interesting to me that, like, our favorite osteopath, Dr. Moreno, he's the same. He works out of this tiny little office in this little town, you know, outside of LA. This Mexican doctor you met is working out of this house in Tijuana. Here you are in the middle of Oregon, not in a populated area, and working out of your small doctor's office. And I want to encourage those of you who are just like looking for somebody to, you know, and I don't even know if Dr. Tomas has taken on new patients, but keep an open mind and be willing to travel and be willing to go outside of the box. You know, we've traveled always for our doctors and for our healing partners, I should say. And so I encourage you to do that, and we'll put his information below. But before we go, Dr. Tomas, I always ask people this question. I would love to know, what is inspiring you lately?
What inspires me lately?
Yes.
What inspires me lately is my kids. That's what inspires me lately. It's my kids, and then and Jesus.
Yeah.
And that's it. There's a two group of people that I've seen them and inspire them daily, every single day. So one of the things that made me wake up in the morning is that say good morning to a very good friend of mine, that is Jesus. And then my kids, I go to the veterans. My son graduates today, actually.
Oh, today's his graduation?
In about 4 hours.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And then
awesome.
I have three daughters that are coming up in the next 3 years. And then that is for me, as that's my inspiration. That's the motivation. That's the my purpose, is just to see if I can give a different approach to this unconditional love, and then there's a different approach to this magic of conflicts called lives, and then we can live completely different. You know, we can be immune. We can be immune to all the things that's very hard nowadays. And help others. You know, if we just help others, that's the whole purpose of yourselves. Yourselves helping each other, and then they talk each other, and then we need to talk each other and help each other. And that's the magic. The magic is, you know, communication and sharing and serving.
Oh, this is so good. Well, you're just an amazing person, and I'm grateful to know you. I know I've said that before, but thank you for being on. Thank you for sharing with just all of these people that now I believe have hope and can just hopefully change perspective in this moment, and how they approach conflict, but also how they love themselves and the people around them. So, Dr. Tomas, thank you. This was amazing. I appreciate you. I had to stop us for just a moment and tell you about something that I believe could change the trajectory of your cancer journey. One of the most devastating parts of a cancer diagnosis is the unwanted side effects and symptoms that accompany conventional treatment. We were so thankful during our journey to have a team of natural practitioners who supported us. They supported us alongside our oncology team to help our son mitigate any side effects that we were told were really common, things like neuropathy and neutropenia, nausea, headaches, loss of appetite, fits of rage, you name it. But we were so thankful that he didn't experience very many of these. And the ones that he did, we were able to combat with natural solutions. I put together this Thrive Through Cancer Protocol Guide to help you and your loved one thrive through your diagnosis by having specific protocols that you can use at your fingertips with products that you can access without a prescription. You guys, it's only $59. There are over 30 different specific protocols for some of the most common yet uncomfortable and debilitating side effects and symptoms. I'm going to put a link in the show notes, or you can go to seasonjohnson.com, choose the shop and resources tab, scroll all the way to the bottom, and there you'll find it. Honestly, I get emotional just thinking about the little bit of power that you will have back in your hands to fight better and support your body with the tools and the resources that God gave us.